And it is today's Topical Currents, Wednesday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. And today we discuss lifestyle adjustments of surviving spouses after perhaps decades of marriage. We have psychotherapist Dr. Linda Sherby. She's the author of Life and Loss in Life and Treatment. She's a widow who practices in Boca Raton. Welcome to you, Dr. Sherby.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and also with us is Hal Spielman. He's conducted surveys and written the book Suddenly Solo, A Lifestyle Roadmap for the Mature, Widowed, or Divorced Man. He joins us from Lake Worth. And good afternoon to you.
Hi, it's nice of you to have me join you.
Good.
Let me correct myself. I misidentified Dr. Sherby's book. It's Love and Loss in Life
and in treatment. Okay.
Thank you.
And also with us from Delray Beach is Bob Levinson. He was married 61 years before the death of his wife, but has found a new love. He and Zelda Luxenberg have co-written the book Full Circle, A Love Story. Welcome to you, Bob Levinson.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Sherby, let's begin with you. You experienced the profound loss of your husband. Well, as a psychoanalyst, surely you deal with the grief of your patients. So how did your work affect your mourning process, and how did your mourning affect your work?
Oh, boy. That's about three-quarters of my book is probably about that. But first of all, my work was very helpful to me during my mourning process. I really don't know what I would have done had I not been working. It was not only during the mourning process, but also when my husband was really ill.
So we had a long caregiving time?
Well, the quick answer to that is a year and 16 months that was very difficult. Mm. So during that time, my work was kind of a respite. It was a place to go and to escape into my patient's pain,
sure,
which provided me a relief in some ways. I could focus on somebody else's pain rather than my own. The question of how my mourning affected my work is really part of the reason I wrote the book, because I think although therapists talk a lot about how their past and how their dynamics and how their unconscious affects their work with patients, they don't talk much about how their present life experience affects their work with patients, and I think it affects it a great deal. I think there were patients who were profoundly influenced by my mourning process, some of whom knew about it and some of whom didn't. But I think there's still a kind of unconscious communication that occurs. And some people would ask me, you know, who died, or would ask me, how come you have all these medical emergencies? And I learned to be far more self-revealing. And, of course, how patients responded to that depended upon who they were, where they were in the treatment. But in general, I would say I think that patients were tremendous. The patients who really got to know the most about me and my grieving during that time, I would say, were able to use it in a very beneficial way.
For their own treatment.
For their own treatment, not for mine.
Yes. Right, right.
Yes.
It's unusual, isn't it, for a psychoanalyst to divulge a lot of personal information?
Very unusual. It's less unusual these days, certainly, than it was 50 years ago,
right,
30 years ago. But, yes, I have divulged far more information. And I did it for two reasons. One, the professional love I've already mentioned, which is that I wanted to show how present circumstances can affect treatment. And the other thing, the real motivation for this book was for me to memorialize my husband and our relationship. And so in order to do that, I needed to do, I had to do memoir. I couldn't do that without putting us on the pages, Which doesn't mean that I have revealed every secret in my life. I have not.
Of course.
But yes, it is a far more revealing book than many.
So, Hal Spielman, Delray Beach, tell us why you wrote the book and tell us about the surveys that you conducted.
Well, my field is market research, and after my wife had passed away, which is just over 5 years ago, about a year afterwards, I retired from the company I had founded, a market research company, and I quickly realized that there was very little information out there for mature men who were widowed or divorced, and most of what was out there for women was generally memoirs or information based on the body of information that a psychologist or a professional had picked up in their experience. But since my field was market research, we tended to look at very large samples. So about a year after my wife passed away, I did retire from my company and quickly wanted to see, first I became aware of my own shortcomings and the limitations of what was happening to me in the single situation. So,
what do you mean by that, your own shortcomings?
I had never done a laundry. That seems so basic and so simple.
Oh, okay, the taking care of yourself part.
Hal, I would never ask this question of a guest, but due to today's topic, what is your age?
I'm 86.
And 86 so years young.
Very active, you know, a great many things. What I wanted to do was to find out how people in this situation were coping with their own life experiences and being single. So I designed 7 studies. We eventually interviewed just over 1,000 men who were also mature, widowed, and divorced, and just over 600 women who were in that same situation and age group. And I was now confronted with this nice big pile of data. And I said, well, what do I do with it? So doing some analysis, and I was not going to write a research book because nobody's going to read that. So we wrote with a close friend of mine, who was a professional writer, a humorous book filled with narratives and hints, little things like cut your toenails. If you don't know why, you can figure that out.
Even if they look like Fritos?
So we tried to do that, and we developed a website, an information site called suddenlysolo.org. And it's been in existence about 6 months, and it's got about 500 separate pieces of information and responses to questions that people have put to us. We look at them both from the primary research that I did, but also from secondary research sources as well. Again, we try to treat everything with humor. We now have a radio show that is sponsored by one of the local universities that also deals with that. About 6 weeks ago, I was on the Today Show, and within 5 days, we got over 250,000 hits to our website.
Oh my.
So clearly the market of people who are in this situation is out there. Census data tells us that there are 19 million people over 55 that are single. Of course, it's heavily skewed to women. The ratios are roughly 3-to-1 in the upper age groups of women to men.
Bonnie, he has a radio show. We have some competition now.
Yeah, and he was on the Today Show. I wonder if he's going to get 250,000 hits from this program today. Well, it's
rather amazing experience, and the NBC people were rather shocked by the return that we got. It was really our server shut down. It was kind of overwhelmed. But clearly, it is a very important topic. And we approach it, even though we wrote a light book, it's a serious topic, serious data, but we tried to handle it in a humorous way, so that it is very readable, with the whole objective of getting people, particularly men, to get off their butt and get out there and live a social life again.
Well, we have someone with us who did just that. Let's turn to Rob Levinson. We come full circle with you, Rob Levinson.
Right.
You did find love in your life after a marriage of 61 years. Tell us about Zelda and how you met.
Well, I want to say first that our book really was written by three people. I met Zelda here at Harbor's Edge in Delray Beach. She had lost her husband after about 57 years. I had lost my wife after 61 years. And we were here at Harbor's Edge and we were introduced by a couple who were very charming to get us going.
And your age, Rob?
I'm 88 years old, and I'm thrilled to be that age. I still work for Lynn University in Boca Raton. I've been there for 22 years. I don't believe in retiring. I wrote another book called The Anti-Retirement Book. I don't believe in retiring. Well, anyway, Zelda and I met, and we decided...
Bob, I'm with you.
We do write a book, a humorous book, about all the things that happened here at Harbor's Edge. And we start writing it, and we ran into a charming lady by the name of Carol Clark, who is an actress, a writer, and she was really interested in our story. And she says, well, why don't we get together? And all three of us worked together, and we worked for months and months and months and put together the book Full Circle, A Love Story. It really is, it's a little embarrassing for me to say this, but in a way it's a very inspiring for people who lose their spouse and who really long for some friendly attitude towards another person, of sharing their life with another person, but not knowing what to do and how to do it. And the book really tells a little bit about each of us and our past, and tells about how we met and how it slowly developed into a glorious romance. And we're like kids again at our age, and we just have a ball together.
Well, we need to take a break, but before we do, Dr. Sherby, what do you think of the story so far of Hal and Bob?
Well, I think they're inspiring, and I, you know, applaud them both. I'm also an anti-retirement person. Of course, I'm a little younger than they are. But, I did want to say that both of them remind me, of this one experience I had with a patient. She's 75. Her significant other is 90, and he had asked to come in. She's really my patient. And he came in, and because he wanted to talk about the fact that they weren't feeling sufficiently close. And in the course of that conversation, I realized that what he was saying was, well, since I know I'm going to die, I really can't risk being close and connected, because it'll only then be loss for the person I'm leaving behind. And it made me extremely sad because, I said to him, oh, no, that's not true at all. You can really, in the time you have left, you can really connect and be close and be loving. It can make the reverse effect. And I think both gentlemen who are talking, Hal and Bob, are both saying that. And so I applaud them both.
We are speaking with, that was the voice of Linda Sherby. She's a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst. And she's written Love and Loss in Life and in Treatment. We have Hal Spielman. His book is Suddenly Solo, A Lifestyle Roadmap for the Mature, Widowed, or Divorced Man. And we have Bob Levinson with us. He's Senior Development Officer at Lynn University. And he's written Full Circle, A Love Story. And he's written it with Zelda Luxenberg and, I know it's a lot
Carol
to say,
Clark.
And Carol Clark. Okay, we are going to take a
Cast
short
of
break
thousands
now.
Here.
And we'll be back.
Every sight and every sound. And I don't know if I'm being foolish. Don't know if I'm being wise. But it's something that I must believe in. And it's there when I look in your eyes.
Love is in the air, in the whisper of the tree.
It's everywhere.
Love is in the air, in the thunder of the sea. And I don't know if I'm just dreaming. Don't know if I feel safe. But it's something that I must believe.
Love is in the air. John Paul Young, 1978.
Oh, yes.
Boy, I feel kind of
moved.
Kind of in a loving mood here now.
Bob, I want to ask you, I know that you and Zelda both were primary caretakers for quite a long time, you can talk about that, but I wanted to ask you how you learned to care for yourself during the time that you were a caretaker.
Well, I'm not sure we did. You sort of go with the stream. You do what you have to do, and you really don't think about yourself. You're too busy worrying about your spouse, it does get to you, obviously. And it got to me a little bit, but I got okay. And I think Zelda's very strong, and she was terrific. So it is a problem. The caretaker always has the biggest problem in a way, because there is a strain, and they're worried, and they don't know what to do, and so forth. So it's tough. It's not easy.
And Dr. Sherby, how was it for you?
Oh, yes, it's really tough. I mean, like everyone else, I talk about the roller coaster ride. You know, there were times that it looked like my husband had a miracle and things were going to get better, and then he'd crash, and you know, there was constant medical emergencies, and, you know, he'd fall, and suddenly had a subdural hematoma. And, you know, I mean, there was it's endless. And certainly that's true for, I mean, I have a patient who was her husband's caretaker for 13 years. You know, that's really tough going.
Yeah.
Now, Hal, your wife died abruptly and unexpectedly, is that right?
Not true. She was ill for 14 years.
Oh, okay.
The last 2 years were extremely difficult for her. She was moderately incapacitated, and I did find myself in the role of a caretaker. But fortunately, she came from a large family. She was the youngest by 7 years to her next siblings, the twins, and there were four of the sisters, and they were wonderful in helping me, as well as the neighbors and friends that we had in our area, in this case, our winter home, our summer home up in Sands Point, New York. But it is a burden. It clearly affected my ability to continue to work, and so I shortly afterwards I did retire after 40 some odd years with my company. It's a difficult
Bonnie,
time for everybody.
Cut in,
and there is unfortunately relatively little understanding of the role of the caretaker. Certainly, I would like to see more in the way of courses, of instructional information, more on websites of how to accomplish this difficult role.
Yes. What were you going to say,
Bob? I was going to say that, you know, we're talking about the problems with the caretaker, but, you know, the patient is the one that suffered. They're the ones that died. They're the ones that had the problem. And our disability, whatever it might have been at that time, goes away pretty quickly if you have a good positive mental attitude and realize that life does go on. And that's what Zelda and I looked at each other, and when we started going together, we said, hey, We've got to realize that our spouses are not coming back, and we've got to enjoy our life. And you really have to have that right attitude to do that.
That's a good point. And my wife and I discussed that before when we knew she was slipping away. She was considerably younger than I am. And but she's the one that brought it up and said, hey, life goes on. And clearly made a very decided effort to dissipate any guilt feelings I might have of dating again, which I finally did after a couple of years.
I'd like to add, Bonnie and Joe, that he mentioned about family. Family is a very important aspect, and here at Harbor's Edge, we are concerned there are people who don't have family or their family are away. I was fortunate to have family here in Delray Beach, a son and his wife, who are phenomenal people, and their three daughters, and they were marvelous. A son up in Ohio, and with his three sons, and they were on the phone with me constantly. And having a family support is terrific. So I think for those people who are younger, developing a great family relationship will make you very happy as the time goes on in your life, and they become very, very important to you.
We're speaking about loss, we're speaking about love, and we're speaking about finding love again in some cases on today's Topical Currents. If you want to join in the conversation with your experience or question, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. You can email us at radio@WLRN.org or tweet us at Topical Currents.
Bob and Hal, I want to ask you both this question. After decades and decades of marriage, what was that first date like?
Well, it was very interesting. We went out to dinner at our local restaurant, and we sat there and started talking about, you know, tell me all about you. I didn't know anything about Zelda, and she wanted to know about me, you know, our background, our religion, our interests, our whatever, politics and so.
Now, Zelda's late husband wasn't named Scott, was he?
No. His name was Marvin. But anyway, so we sat there, and after about 40 minutes, the waiter of Zelda said to me, do you think I could have a cup of coffee? And the waiter came by, he says, you two are so involved, I didn't think I would bother you. It was a delightful experience, and it really set us up. Or it was like a date, and not long afterwards, Zelda has two sons, and one of her sons said, hey, Mom, Bob has been very good to you. Why don't you take him out to dinner one night? So she asked me, called me and said, let's have dinner, and she took me to a local restaurant. She drove. She had money for the tip. She took the bill, and it was really cute. And our love just developed and developed because of that close relationship.
And Hal?
Well, it's pretty interesting because The early part of our book deals specifically with those issues.
Right.
How do you handle a first date? Where do you go? We just discussed that on the radio show. And we specifically say, do not go to a movie. Go to somewhere where you can talk. And that's exactly what Bob did. And it was the right thing to do, to exchange histories and get comfortable with each other. And incidentally, we find that word comfort comes up over and over in our research. People want to be with people generally in their own age range because they're most comfortable. And, you know, the media myth of men want to date young, big-boob blondes is just not true. It's just not what they're interested in. And again, from our data, we know that mature men prefer brunettes to blondes. I think it was 48% to 35%, and prefer slim women to buxom women. It's amazing when you start to look at what a thousand or people tell you.
Maybe you can't be too choosy at the stage.
one of the tricks that I did is, as I began to date Zelda and be with her, I would be talking to my family. I have six grandchildren and two sons and two daughters-in-law. And every time I was on the telephone, I always let Zelda talk to them, even though they didn't know who she was. And so that when they actually met, they became they were friends. And the first night here in Delray, when my daughter-in-law and my son took us out to dinner early on, my daughter-in-law, who is marvelous, she's an RN, she's a marvelous lady, she jumps out of the car and hugs Zelda, and it's right away, that was it. You know, and the relationship was terrific. Because the children are very important in this thing. To be sure that they're with you in what you're doing. Because if they're against you, then you've got really a battle.
In the Ask Hal section is, how do I tell my family that I'm dating? And the concerns are very real.
Like it's a crime.
Well, it's difficult.
Yeah.
They're used to their mother, of course.
Yeah, we find that there are people, and frequently the daughter who says, oh, you've been widowed for 2 years and you're dating, while you're besmirching the mom's memory. Well, she's overlooking the fact that the dating, the socialization, is a very important part to making dad happy. And, of course, the other underlying question that comes up is this new woman going to threaten the inheritance?
That's the main thing.
There we go, the estate.
Yeah, but
that's a serious issue. But the professionals, the lawyers and accountants, know how to deal with that and help you through that issue.
Well, Dr. Sherby, you wanted to add something?
Yes, two things. One, yes, certainly the inheritance is an issue, but the question is, will the other woman or the other man affect the relationship with the child, with the adult child? I mean, with the grown daughter, is the grown daughter going to be somehow less than now that the widow or father is dating someone else? So that's one thing. But the other thing I think that both of you gentlemen are saying that's very important is that you were immediately upfront and comfortable about being out there with your children, about being dating or being involved.
Right.
And I think that the more people are able to not feel any guilt or any shame themselves and to present it forthright and sort of like, as you said, I'm on the phone with my grandchildren. Well, here's Zelda, talk to her. I think that does make, the more comfortable you are, I think the more comfortable your family will be.
And That's a very good point.
We're, again, speaking about loving and losing here on Today Topical Currents and grieving any of these issues. If you'd like to join in the conversation, the number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is open.
That's radio at WLRN.org. And also you can tweet us. That's at Topical Currents. First caller, we have Phyllis in Boca Raton.
Hello. I just wanted to say that my mother recently was widowed about 3 years ago, and this was her second husband. And I'm the oldest of five siblings, and we all encouraged her and did everything we could to get her to move on. She was married for 24 years and, of course, grieved the death of this husband as much as she grieved the death of her first husband. But the support from her children really helped her into getting involved in different organizations and getting out there and meeting people. And this is a woman who has a vivacious personality anyway, but it was interesting how the death of her second husband just completely set her back. And she has since met someone, and I have to tell you, I mean, my mother today, I'm in my early 60s, and she actually looks better, acts livelier. She's got a kick in her step, and she just always walks around with a smile on her face, and she's so happy. And I think
don't tell us what's making that possible now.
I do believe that it's the person that she's with and the camaraderie and the fact that she has the support from her children. You know, you just mentioned something about financial issues, and that was something that my siblings and I did talk about, but at the end of the day, the most important thing to us was our mother's happiness, because we only have one mother, and she's done everything she could for us, and we have to do the same for her. So I applaud all of you. I think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful, and you're bringing to light the fact that there is life after the death of the spouse, and that if we as children could just be supportive and put our possible negative thoughts aside and remember that our parents need to be happy. They're not here forever, and we want to make sure that for as long as they're here that they are happy, and finding a companion in life really does make them so much happier. And I'll hang up right now, but thank you so much for taking my call.
By the way, the three books that are involved here in today's discussion by Dr. Linda Sherby and Hal Spielman and Bob Levinson will have links at the Topical Currents Facebook page, as well as WLRN.org. So if you're interested in learning more, just go to those sites.
Joe, I think that the element of marriage is important. I don't think at our stage in our life, at 88 years old, that we have to get married. We're together, and we enjoy each other, and whether or not we have a certificate from the courthouse or not is irrelevant. And I think that
that is an attitude we've heard expressed multiple times It is indicative of the multiple kinds of relationships, living relationships, day-to-day relationships that are established by couples.
Right.
And the traditional two people living in one house with the certificate has clearly broken down for the mature population. And we just heard all kinds of patterns that people set up but are still considered couples.
Well, that seems sensible.
Yeah.
Dr. Sherby, how has your experience of loss affected the way you relate to your patients? Has it changed anything for you?
Well, I think so. I think that I am both more willing, maybe even more needing, to get intensely involved with my patients. You know, I did lose the person in my life who was my main relationship, and I'm certainly not suggesting I'm substituting patients for my late husband.
Have you created another relationship?
No, I don't have another. I have dated some.
Sorry, I'll be to.
That's okay.
Yeah, infringe on your privacy.
No, that's all right.
Considering the discussion,
right? No,
Linda,
no,
I may need your phone number.
How do you feel about that for you at some point in the future?
I feel like I'm ready for a relationship. I would say I think when I started dating, maybe 2 years after my husband died, I don't think that I was ready. I think somehow starting to write the book, finishing the book, I think has helped me very much along in the mourning process. And I do feel that I am ready for a relationship. I would like a relationship. I have a very full life. If I don't find a relationship, I'm certainly not willing to, quote, settle.
Yes.
But I feel like I'm open, I guess, you know. Ask me in a year, too.
Right.
It's hard to know.
Yeah, I think you have to have a feeling when you lose a spouse that you miss a relationship.
Right.
And that I don't think you can be, in my way of thinking, happy alone. So I think it's important to really be very proactive about this and try to find somebody with whom you can have fun with, enjoy with, and hug and kiss and be with. And I think that's very, very important. And I think
found in our data that the widowed man usually waits a year to a year and a half before he's prepared to start dating. And I couldn't
wait that long.
And what about and what did you find about women? How long do they wait?
Well, it's a little difficult to get a good answer on that because the ratios favor the men. And even though
that's
a woman may
true.
Feel ready, she may be having a difficult time making a connection because the numbers work against her.
Mm-hmm.
So in some of the research we did, we would hear, actually Linda was very close to explaining it, that women who have a very full life, they have children, they have occupations, they're going out with their friends regularly, but the echo that comes back is that they miss having someone, well, even put it in the words I heard, I missed having the warm body next to me.
For sure, yeah.
And it wasn't purely a sexual comment.
Mm-hmm.
It was more than just the sexual aspect that they were talking about. It's the closeness, the sharing, all of those things.
Absolutely,
in fact,
of
in
course.
Our progression of closeness, and we have one in our book, sex is not the objective. It's part of the relationship, but it's not a reason for a relationship. It's much deeper and more layered than that.
Well, we're getting a lot of calls.
And some tweets.
And I guess some email. Let's go to Bob. He's in Margate. He's been on the board for a while. Thanks for your patience, Bob. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 76-year-old man, and I miss the warmth of a relationship. I'm divorced, and I'm trying to find the right environment in which to meet another woman. Can you give any advice on how I might go about that?
Okay, who wants to take that?
Yeah, well, I can give you some data.
Delray and move in. You'll be overwhelmed by women.
I'm sorry?
I say come to Delray Beach.
That's how I'm very near to Delray
Beach. Delray Beach is the senior single dating capital of the world.
Wait a minute, just one at a time so we can... We want to advise Bob, but he can't hear all of you at once.
That's right.
At least they did say a gentleman's club.
Come up to Harbor's Edge, an independent living facility, and move in. And you'll be inundated with women. I mean, like crazy.
Harbor's Edge. Yeah. I can find Harbor's Edge, I suppose.
Yes,
but who do I see, and how do I go about locating either an organization or a venue? Or where do I go in Harbor's Edge?
It's an independent retirement community. You move in.
I own my own condo already in Margate. Why? Who do I visit in Harbor's Edge?
Well, maybe you could go to Hal's website, suddenlysolo.org.
You have to put yourself in a position
the information site.
Suddenly Solo.
One moment, Bob. Suddenlysolo.org.
.org. Okay.
We know, again, from the data that of people that are in a relationship, 24% of them have met using the online services.
Yeah. I've used the online, and 3% I find it very chancy and very...
One moment. Bob's trying to talk. Bob, go ahead. How did you find the online dating?
I have used the online services and find them riddled with... it's hard to describe it as not as an untruth, but as exaggerations and all kinds of misleading information is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, and it's a very big mistake, because if you just Google the person, you're going to get all the details, and it's just pointless to try and lie on your online site.
Bob, you have to put yourself in a position of being with people.
Yes.
Whether it's a church group, whether it's a social group and so forth. But you have to be aggressive about being with people. You can't sit home and say, I wish I could find somebody. You got to go out, go to a bar, go to restaurants, go to places, go to meetings, go to organizations, join
groups. I kind of think of myself as an intellectual. I'm having trouble with the right venue.
Okay. What were you saying, Bob? You think of yourself as an intellectual?
And I'm having trouble finding the right venue.
Okay.
Well, how about the library?
How often do I go to the library? Very often.
Or art museums or openings?
Often. I go often.
Concerts?
Do you meet people?
I'm sorry?
Do you talk to people?
Can I get a word in?
Well, you know, in this day and age, you've got to be careful about how you approach people out in public. The public environment today is very different from the public environment that existed when I was courting my former wife.
Well, however, how you present yourself is often helpful in terms of conveying the message.
Uh-huh.
You know, somebody who presents as really removed and reserved and into themselves is not going to be, you know, seen as very friendly and outgoing and as a possibility. So, but, you know, I don't disagree with you. I think that online dating has... host of difficulties, you know, and of course, as a woman, I think it is more difficult. I mean, you do have an advantage, a 76-year-old man, you know, you have a pretty wide range of possibilities there.
I'm told not to ride my Harley. I'm told to use my car. I'm told to always dress in a suit. I'm told
to... Well, maybe you should turn all that around and ride the Harley.
In your suit.
Bob, well, it's Topical Currents.
Bob, we have to run.
Yeah.
So happy hunting.
Thank you.
Topical Currents, we are...
The forward and the afterward in the Suddenly Solo book was written by Bill Novelli, the former CEO of AARP. And in the afterward, he built a very strong case for involvement in do-good activities in your community, because you'll meet people that with similar interests and that are local, and that's quite worthwhile.
Okay.
And that's a good way to meet people.
Excellent. We are speaking. That was the voice of Hal Spielman and Bob Levinson and Dr. Linda Sherby on today's Topical Currents, Loving, Losing, Dating. And we'll be back with more.
Well, we returned. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, psychotherapist Dr. Linda Sherby, Hal Spielman, and also Bob Levinson. They all have books associated, and you can find those at the Topical Currents Facebook page or our website, WLRN.org. And we have tweets.
We have a tweet. Will wants to know, was there a feeling of guilt settling after being married for 50-plus years when you start dating the new partner? So, Bob?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. The first time that I kissed Zelda, I thought to myself, wow, this is quite interesting.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. And I'm wondering, this is a new relationship. And when I hugged her and I began to realize that this is a new relationship you sort of have a flashback to your spouse.
Now, you're not going any farther than that, right?
Yeah. No, but I think all of this stuff, you got to have a positive mental attitude about this. I think that's the problem. And this gentleman that called about he can't find, if he went to a retirement community or went any place and he was at least introduced himself, women would all over this guy.
I would think book readings would be a good place to go.
Whatever.
Book clubs.
Yeah, yeah. Any place, you know. But you got to be a little aggressive about this. But we're having a life at age 88 with a wonderful woman that I have. And it is a thrilling adventure in life, and we're looking forward to years ahead. I mean, we just think we got the world ahead of us.
Dr. Sherby, you say that mourning is not really a process that's ever over. How are you today?
Mourning is not a process that's ever over. I would say certainly that I am much, 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 much better than I was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. But there are still things that, you know, evoke sadness. I imagine that there always will be. And that's all right with me. I mean, I don't think, there are a few things I want to say. First of all, I want to be really clear that taking a new relationship does not mean giving up the old relationship. It's adding.
That's a good point.
That person has not, you know, if you've been married, it doesn't matter if it was 29 years or 61 years, it's not like that person is going to disappear. And in fact, my sense is that mourning is about taking that person and your experience of yourself with that person with you forever. Now, that doesn't mean not taking a new relationship, although I did want to say that both Hal and Bob, listening to you, it's clear, I think, that you've always had positive attitudes towards life, that you've embraced life, but not everybody is like that. You know, there are people who have been depressed for 50 years. When they lose a spouse, they just can't have a good attitude and move on.
It's common that one spouse dies, the other follows fairly soon.
Yes, that is common.
Very common.
That is common. But it's also true that people, it's not, I mean, for some people, yes, it's not hard because there is this sense of positiveness. But for other people, it's really a chore. It's hard. You can't just say have a positive attitude. Many people don't have positive attitudes.
Well, they can change.
Well, I think that's true, but I spend my life doing that, is to help people change.
Zelda and I, our spouses are buried in Boca within 40 feet of each other.
Uh-huh.
And their birthdays happen to be the same day.
Wow.
And each May, when their birthdays, we go to the cemetery, we say a prayer, and we go out and lunch and enjoy ourselves. We
That's
pay
wonderful.
Our respects, and then we enjoy ourselves.
Yeah.
They're not coming back, and we've got
That's
to
right.
live. It's our life.
You have to go on, moving on.
And we have to go on.
Right. You know, Dr. Sherby, your book is very much a love story as well. Did you learn something about yourself in writing this book?
Well, it is definitely a love story. I certainly didn't learn writing the book that I loved my husband.
Well, that I assume, yes.
I certainly knew that. I learned that I could reveal myself. Again, not completely, but to a certain extent. I learned that I love to write. I learned that I write well. I learned that, that definitely, that people who have read my book have definitely had different reactions to my book. Again, not surprising, people who bring different things to it. The whole question of whether patients read the book, whether how they feel about it, and of course that too, it depends upon who they are. Some patients have said, I haven't told people I wrote the book, but many people have found out. It's not the secret, certainly. And some people choose not to read it. Some people choose to read it. You know, I just ask that they talk with me about it. But everything we do teaches us something different about ourselves. So.
Can I comment on your question about the
very,
first?
Very quickly.
Just get past that and think about the first time you take your clothes off. And that's a revelation for, and a big step, particularly for women. And there is a book out there called Naked at Our Age about the whole aspect of sexual coupling for mature people.
Well, we want to thank you all. I'm sorry, we're just about out of time, and I want to give the information. We've been speaking with Dr. Linda Sherby. She's a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst. The name of her book is Love and Loss in Life and in Treatment. Harold, or Hal Spielman, is written Suddenly Solo, a Lifestyle Roadmap for the Mature, Widowed, or Divorced Man, and his website is suddenlysolo.org, and we'll have a link to that on our website. And also with us, Bob Levinson. He's written with Zelda Luxenberg and Carol Clark, Full Circle, a Love Story Written. And it's been a pleasure to have all of you with us today.
Thank you. We enjoyed it very much.
Thank you so much
for having us.
And good luck to all of you.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up today's program. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction from Paul Leary, and also he's the online producer. Tomorrow's program looks at the Florida environment and wild areas. Also, Linda Gassenheimer, it's all about ice cream. July is National Ice Cream Month. And, of course, our favorite wine columnist, Fred Tasker. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And an all-posthumous calendar. On this day in 1966, 47 years ago, the death of 45-year-old actor Montgomery Clift of heart attack in New York City. Before his charismatic movie career, he played Broadway for 10 years, starting at age 15. His first movie role was in 1946, opposite John Wayne. And on this day in 1980, 33 years ago, the death of actor and comedian Peter Sellers, age 54, again from a coronary. The Goon Show, The Pink Panther. One more while we consider 18 novels and 14 children's books. On this day in 1991, 22 years ago, the death of Nobel Prize winner Isaac Bashevis Singer in Surfside, Florida. One of his late hangouts was the old Sheldon's Drugstore Diner, 95th and Harding. So we leave with a thought from Montgomery Clift, born in Omaha, Nebraska in 1920, as was Marlon Brando in 1924, quote, "The sadness of our existence should not leave us blunted, but on the contrary, how to remain thin-skinned, vulnerable, and stay alive." Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening today. Next, it's Here and Now from Where Else But NPR News.